back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena Jennifer Curtin, how are you?
Good, thank you.
It's nice to hear from you. I hope you're well.
I am. I'm in chilly Wellington.
Well, it's not too chilly up here, but it's certainly very, very wet, so I hope you've at least not got that going on for you. Hey, we've got a lot to talk about this morning. Let's start by talking about what's happening with the abortion law reform that's sort of being, I guess it's like the hot topic of the moment, really. So the government's announced a bill that would only require a medical test for women who are more than 20 weeks pregnant. That's the option that they've selected to try and put before the House. So the government said that they've picked that option as it's the one that's most likely to garner support across the House. Do you think that that is a fair assertion? Do you think it's a good option that they've picked?
I suppose the main thing I think is really important is the fact that this is, for the most part, coming out of the Crimes Act. That's really important. Mm-hmm. Choosing this option is politically sensible, I think, because there's, by limiting choice, I suppose, and removing the sort of barriers that existed around needing to get double sign off and having really clear mental or physical health grounds for under 20 weeks, you know, that's sort of something that's more easily able to be sold to the public as and less likely. I just think that the over 20 weeks, there were real political risks with the pro-life organised groups coming up with claims that people would be seeking, that women would be seeking abortions right up to 9 months. So what they've done is taken that, the possibility of pro-life groups hanging all of their pushback on that part, and then they're going to have to sort of debate the broader broader issues around, you know, the position, their position, which is that an unborn, that a fetus is an unborn child, and, you know, and go there, which is, you know, what we know from surveys is that around 65% of the New Zealand public think that abortion should be a woman's choice, and that health grounds are, you know, that this is a health issue and not a sort of a religious issue and those sorts of things. So New Zealand's really moved on from the 1970s in this regard, and I think, you know, the coalition, well, except for New Zealand First, it seems, but the coalition is really taking perhaps a pragmatic line on this.
I think you're totally right that it coming out of the Crimes Act is really the massive win here. And as you were saying, you know, making a decision that can, I guess, mean that it's easier for a broader conversation to happen so that it's not focusing on certain bits is really important. But I guess something that's already presenting itself is the misinformation that's being spread. I mean, we saw Chris Penk's tweets yesterday that were, you know, from an MP who's spreading misinformation, and then Simon Bridges sort of not really calling him out on that at all. You know, what is this going to do to sort of our political debate, I guess? Because this is an alarming way for it to start.
So my take on this is that most of this kind of division or divisive way of dealing with this issue is going to happen on the centre-right. So we would expect ACT, for example, given that David Seymour is supporting, you know, the euthanasia bill, that as a libertarian he would support a woman's choice. But within the National Party, particularly, there seems to be quite a bit of division. Nikki Kaye was also tweeting yesterday about how, you know, kudos to Andrew Little, how she feels that this choice to go with this more conservative approach is problematic. She wanted to see the law reform report options adopted more fully. So I mean, Chris Penk's position is probably sits snugly with some of the more religious positions on this issue. Simon Bridges, we know Bill English never supported it. I think Simon Bridges is going to have some, even though it's a conscience issue, have some challenges around trying to keep the debate civil within his own caucus. On the Labor side, I mean, Andrew Little's been really clear that the vote is likely to go close, and he's not predicting how it will go, and we know that a lot of Māori and Pacifica whānau would be concerned about pro-choice positions as well. So it's not straightforward, but I do think that we're going to see more on this, the centre from National, sort of fractious, you know, kinds of interactions on this, because there are some liberal, progressive women and men inside their party on this issue.
Absolutely. Another thing that is sort of, I guess, a big part of this conversation is Winston Peters asking for a referendum. So what's all this about, Jennifer, and what's going to happen from this, really?
Okay, so I don't think there's going to be a referendum. We've already got, you know, the cannabis referendum coming. Referendums cost a lot of money. Big effort for if they attach them to elections for the Electoral Commission. In between times, if you want a referendum, sometimes what we see with, like, when they amended Section 59 of the Crimes Act, which was the, in scare quotes, anti-smacking legislation, we saw a referendum on that. And the people that turn out, it's a really low turnout. And then these single issue sorts of referendum are not always as democratic as they appear to be, especially, when they galvanise emotional conscience-type issues like this. So I feel like he's stirring the pot. I think he's speaking to some of his constituency in terms of retirees, like, because and some in the Māori community. We know, for example, from the same survey of 20,000 people that showed that 65% support it, that those who don't tend to be in the older age bracket, you know, so well over 65, and so he may be speaking to them, but he's, you know, there's a great piece in the spin-off about how Winston Peters has this tendency to, you know, when complex issues or issues that he doesn't really want to draw a line in the sand on, he sort of suggests this referendum. So, and it gives them some media attention, and maybe it means that he's sort of signalling how he might vote if it does come to a conscience issue.
Right, yeah. Well, we might move on and talk a little bit before we run out of time about Sir Anand Satyanand, who's stepping down as head of inquiry into historical abuse by the state. What does this mean for the inquiry, and why is he doing this?
Well, he's saying that it's because he expected it to be a part-time job and it's turned into a full-time job, and he wants to spend more time with his family. He's also taking up a position as Chancellor at Waikato University, which is a ceremonial part-time role. So that's one part of it. But also he was receiving heavy criticism by people who are really unhappy on how the inquiry is proceeding in all sorts of ways, actually, for appearing to fall asleep during hearings, because of his own Catholic faith. There was concerns that because faith-based institutions are being examined as part of this, that maybe it wouldn't necessarily be as open and as reassuring for those who were giving testimony as it would be if there was someone with more secular leanings. So I think, I don't know if there was pressure, but certainly he's staying until November. They're going to have to find a new, a new lead on this. Now there's a whole bunch of discussions about whether it will be an existing commission or it'll bring somebody in new from outside, and will that delay the process? So it's actually in one sense, a really unfortunate development in an inquiry that's already having to grapple with a whole bunch of other issues that have made some survivors very nervous.
Do you think that What would be, I guess, a positive step forward? Who would be maybe a good person or a good type of person to take on this role going forward? Because as you're saying, it is very disruptive, but obviously some people have had big reservations leading up to this point.
Yeah, this isn't... I would be really hesitant to say who would be the best person, or but clearly they need to have someone in there who is really cognizant of the sensitivities and what around us, and the fact that these survivors, some of whom have already given practice evidence and found out that that's not actually going to be used, and some feel that they've been cut off by other questioners and so on. So it, while it might be easier to pick an existing person from the others, it might actually be better to choose someone from the outside and give it a kickstart, because it's going to be delayed anyway. Mm-hmm. And so maybe they should use that extended time frame to really take a little more care in choosing the right person.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Jennifer. It's lovely to speak to you again. I hope you have a nice weekend down in Wellington as well.
Okay, you too. Thanks, Rachel.
Thank you. Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
Thanks.